All right, nice to be with you this morning as we get ready for the conclusion of this somewhat entertaining four-game series between the Giants and the Phillies out here at AT&T Park. I came in this morning with the frozen chicken fillets, a lot of hot dog buns. The beer was here yesterday, but that is as they get ready for this private party for 41,000. And one thing that impressed me is we're going to get to the professor here in just a minute, how clean the ballpark is. And I said, well, how do they do it every day? And these big Zamboni machines like they have in the hockey arenas, up and down the concourses, up and down the hallways, and they steam clean the seats every single day. So that's life at AT&T Park. Well, the Giants made it interesting last night, and a big seven-run inning for the Phillies kind of put it away. And the Giants came back in the ninth inning with five and eventually lost 12-9 to the Phillies. So we welcome the bench coach of the Giants, the professor, Ron Wotus. How are you?
I'm doing well, Marty. Good morning to you.
Yeah, what a game last night. Again, from your vantage point, the game turned so quickly. I mean, I mean this, a number of batters, but a certain amount of pitches. All of a sudden, Ty Block was in a 4-4 game. And maybe about 15 pitches later, it was 11-4.
Yeah. Well, that's baseball, as you like to say. Yeah. You just never know what's going to happen in a game or what's to play or what's to hit that's going to really change the direction of the game. And, that one inning they put together, the big inning, it was, walks. Walks killed us. And then, boom, you get a big hit. And before you know it, there's, six runs on the board. So, that's the game. And, the ball that was lost in the twilight, it seems as if, a guy gets a regular base hit, no big deal. Yeah. But when there's an error or something happens when you should have an out, everybody always points to that as being, look, here we go. And that was the start of this mess.
Yeah, but, it's funny. And we've watched games here, since 2000. And, of course, I've watched baseball, my whole life. More balls are being lost in the twilight lately than I remember. And what's the, you're the infield guy, but what's the key for an outfielder? Why is this happening? Because these are balls that are up there for a while.
Yeah, well, it's tough. I mean, that's one thing that we always do in the infield. It's that time of the night. You always yell at the infielders, and you point to the sky, tell them to help out the outfielder. So when the ball goes up, they should be running out, make sure the outfielder knows where it's at, pointing and yelling. You can't always hear, but try to help him by pointing to the ball. This ball's a little bit different. He's going back to the fence. And it just can be difficult. And I don't have the answer why some guys have maybe a tougher time with it than others. But the twilight is tough. So it usually happens when you take your eye off the ball and you have to run to a spot, as we did last night in center field. Then you turn back around and you hope that you can pick it up coming back down if, your mind tells you where that ball was going to go. But sometimes it's just very, very difficult. It's a difficult time to see when that ball goes up in the air.
Yeah, I guess so. It's the lights or the twilight or the fog or whatever it is.
Yeah, it's not the twilight, the time of day. The lights haven't fully taken effect. It's not as dark. It's a little bit of a haze. And I think there was a little fog here last night at that time in the evening. And to be quite honest, when it went up and I was watching the ball, I lost it too coming down. I saw that he lost it, but I didn't know where it was going to land either, because I didn't see it from my vantage point.
All right, part of baseball, but Pence, it happens to him a lot too.
Well, I don't know if it happens a lot. We've seen it
more than normal.
We've seen it this year, I believe, out of him. And that's a tough one. I mean, I've lost balls in the infield, but usually you have people right next to you. You let somebody know, I don't see it, or it's a sun ball that you lose. Right, it's up, it's in the sun, I don't see it. You let your fellow infielder know, and he got a better angle to make the play.
The catcher for the Phillies lost one on the pop up. And, I know how much you guys work. And here the professor is here, spring training. You run spring training. And that pop-up drill where you get the that machine that shoots them up in the air. And I've seen you try to hit fungos up in the air, try to hit to the catcher and you knock it out into center field.
Yeah, right.
I've
That's not you, pretty. I know.
I've seen you do that. But last night, he made the cardinal mistake, I thought, because the ball always comes back.
Right.
Isn't that the deal? And
yes.
I guess he just didn't get there.
Well, again, I think this ballpark, AT&T, makes this a little more difficult than most parks because of the wind that we have. You know, it's real interesting. When we go on the road, you know, we went to Miami. Of course, we're playing indoors. You go to Washington. It's almost odd, having played in this ballpark for so many years, that it's dead still. There's not a breeze, to play a baseball game with no breeze. And, you know, the pop-ups will come back there, but they don't move as much as they do in this ballpark. And that's why one of the first things we do with young players and catchers, especially first basemen, third basemen, in this park when they come up from the minor leagues, is try to shoot them pop-ups so they can get a feel for how dramatic the wind. Thank you, Gardy. Appreciate that.
A tomato. Is there a secret message that Mark Gardner brought you a tomato?
Well, he knows I love tomatoes.
Oh,
and I try to grow them. It doesn't work out. So he always brings me nice tomatoes from Fresno.
Ah.
So maybe he drove down there last night. I don't know.
But maybe he did. You brought us stuff today. Very nice. For Allie and Carmen, the professor here takes care of us.
Well, they've done the same to me. You know, I have some Thai fried chicken here. I'm looking forward to having to lunch. So we didn't only come in with the rutabakers and the hamburg buns. We have it all here today.
Carmen, you want to explain what you brought the professor there?
I mean, it's exactly what he said. It's Thai fried chicken, so it's marinated in cilantro, white pepper, double battered with rice flour, and then it comes with homemade chili sauce, sweet chili sauce.
And what did he bring you? And Allie.
Blue Bottle New Orleans iced coffee. So good.
Very good. All right.
Yeah.
All right.
I won't have to have any Tums before the game, will I, with the Thai? I'm a little frightened of that.
So. No,
that's fine. Very good.
All right. Hey, Allie with us, of course. Nice to see her this morning. Carmen and the professor here as we get ready for baseball. August baseball. And I've always felt this. In August baseball, the young legs kind of take over. It's a long season. Everybody is tired. I don't care if you're winning 116 games like some teams may do this year, or you've got 50 wins. It's August. You've been working hard. I always feel the young players, things happen in August. Crazy comebacks. And look at the scores in baseball. There's 12-11, 11-10, 13-12. Teams are up 9-0, and then, you know, then they're 9-9. And you got in one of those games last night where young guys sort of made things happen in
the
end.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's true. It's no doubt it's a long season. And, you know, whether it's a young player who is fresher, maybe a guy that's not playing every single day, getting an opportunity to play, or it's a young player coming up from the minor leagues who's been playing well in AAA and is getting his opportunity in the major leagues, they are fresher, you know, and they're probably not more determined, but determined to make an impact in the game. And that's not to say that, you know, the veterans and guys that play every day aren't, but, you know, it's a little easier when you're fresher because it is a long season. And as you said, we saw it last night. I think motivation, you know, every inning, every pitch is a big deal. I mean, you, Marty, you're on air for how many hours a day? I mean,
only 15.
Well, then that's, you don't have any down minutes in that 15 hours. But, you know, the point is, these guys, they're getting an opportunity. They're excited to be here, and they're doing everything they possibly can. And it was nice to see last night us fight back, and, you know, back to how we opened the show. You just never know. You know, you're down by 7 runs, but you just don't know. You got to make that play. You got to make that pitch because you don't know what can happen in this game of baseball.
Suarez looked pretty good last night.
Yeah.
9 outs, 7 strikeouts for him. How about that? We haven't seen that for a while.
Yeah, you know what? He attacked his own. I like what he's done for us since he's been back up here. I like what he's done for us in the past, but, you know, he's a year older. He's very confident. He's got good breaking stuff. He locates the baseball, and he's got a good idea how to pitch. He's not afraid to pitch in, so I've been impressed with the way he's been pitching for us.
Yeah, very nice. That was sort of Lincecum stuff, you know, to strike out that many of 9 outs. He got 7 strikeouts. Gave up the one home run. Ball was over the plate, and as John said, he's been throwing these great curveballs all night, and then he hung one. And these guys don't miss. How do you like that kid Hoskins?
Yeah, he's a good-looking hitter, has power, obviously. Yeah. But the thing that impresses me watching him hit, like most good hitters that you see and you kind of project, regardless of the numbers or the statistics, is it looks like he has a good eye at the plate.
Yes.
Right? He's not chasing pitches all over the zone. You don't see him try to swing at a 2-0 curveball. You know, he'll take that pitch. He's waiting for his pitch, and he puts a good swing on it.
Yeah, nice kid. We'll have him on this morning. And when I ended the interview with him, I said, KMBR 680, and then he jumps in, the sports leader.
Oh, very nice.
Why, he's Sacramento. So,
yeah.
You know, he listens to you all the time. He says he learns from the professors. So.
Yeah, right. Okay.
Maybe. That may be true. All right. The professor is with us this morning. Joe Maddon, you know, he's always in the news, really. You know, he has the Elvis thing. They come out here, they're wearing 70s clothes. There's always something with this guy. And look, the Cubs are, you know, so-so. You saw him, and maybe I'll get your impression of the Cubs versus last year. But now his latest thing is, he says, don't come to the park so early. If we got a 7 o'clock game, show up at 5:45, like Little League, and you just show up and we'll play. What about that?
Well, I think it can be used very effectively to freshen guys up, change the mood. You know, it is a grind, as we talked about. Sometimes you take BP every day, and if you're not playing to your potential and you're doing the same thing every day, what the heck? Isn't that insanity? You're not having results and you're doing the same thing. Try something else. And I think it's along that lines of let's try something else to change this rut we're in or to start playing better baseball. And also it freshens the guys up. You know, like you said, guys get to the ballpark. Some of them get here at 1 o'clock in the afternoon for a 7:15 game. And you go through BP, you go through the whole routine and back to being fresh. I think especially this time of year, it's a good time to back off with some of these things and have some late days that you just show up and put the 3 hours of your energy that day into the game, not into all the pregame, but into the baseball game.
You ever do that? Now, you've managed in the minor leagues. Maybe you have a little bit more leeway, and you managed in Phoenix, who is hot.
Yeah.
Hot still.
Yeah.
You ever do stuff like that?
Yeah, absolutely. We did it more out of necessity, the design, because the flight wouldn't get in until 5 o'clock for a 7 o'clock game sometimes.
Is that right?
Well, we've had a couple. I'm being a little facetious. We've had some games. We actually arrived out of Hawaii into Salt Lake City. You know, you leave on the red eye out of Hawaii. We had a day game in Salt Lake. We had a night game in Hawaii. And we got to the field at 1:30, and the game was supposed to start at 1 o'clock.
Wow.
So they waited for us, obviously, to get there. But you see it all in the minor leagues. But, yeah, a lot of teams do it. I would say most managers in the game have a day where they say, hey, come in at 6 o'clock. We're going to strap it on. You know, the heck with all this extra stuff. It happens quite frequently.
Well, look at spring training. I was just saying, as you're talking, I'm thinking of spring training. Let's say there's a game in Tempe. And you guys may work out a little bit at Scottsdale, but, you know, basically you're on the bus and you show up at Tempe at 12:15 and the game starts at 1. Everybody's walking around pretty much loosening up and then they play.
Yeah. You know, spring training, again, that's a long grind as well. I mean, we do so much work, you know, before the games. And it seems like every year there's more and more games to play in the spring. And, you know, you want to leave spring training healthy, number one, and having guys in baseball shape. And, you know, it's a delicate balance because, you know, you want to have the good work ethic. You want to try to get better every day and accomplish the things that you want to accomplish. But quite honestly, sometimes it's more beneficial to back off, clear the mind, and rest the body.
Yeah, I like it. I like he'll try that. I know you've done it. You know, you've canceled batting practice, come in late. I've seen that. But this was one. Seriously, the game was at 7, and I think he told him to show up at 6. Or so, you know,
that's a little late. Yeah, that's a little late. Usually it's an hour and a half or 2 hours before the game, but that is more in keeping what teams do in the minor leagues. Hey, an hour before, let's go.
Or the winter ball. How about winter ball? I was told stories in winter ball that guys just show up. You don't know if they're going to show up, and then they show up. They could be having a weapon with them, and they just, you know, they show up and just play. You never know who's going to come.
Yeah, I hear the same thing. I played in Colombia, and I played in Venezuela, but I really wasn't in tune with that as much. But, you know, I'm talking to Jose Alguacil, who coaches in winter ball every single year, and other guys over the years. That's what they say. The local guys that play for their teams, you just never know if they're going to show up that day or what time they're going to show up. They don't always come for BP, so. Yeah, I've heard that same thing.
Yeah, Bob Guerin told me the guys would show up with weapons. And he'd have to take the weapon.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, no, he told me that story. That was managing in the Dominican Republic maybe 10 years ago or something like that.
Wow. Well, I know it's not very pretty in Venezuela right now, so maybe it's a good thing that they're carrying weapons with them to protect themselves.
Well, you know, just going back a little, as we like to go back a little history, the Havana Sugar Kings were in the International League in 1960. And, of course, Castro had taken over then, and the military had a tremendous presence. They loved baseball. They were always at the baseball games. And they would just shoot the gun off up in the air like it was New Year's Eve, that kind of thing. And Frank Verde, who was from the Rochester Red Wings, had like the steel plate helmet on, and a bullet grazed the helmet. And that was it. The Havana Sugar Kings were then relocated to Jersey City. To Jersey City in 1960, and that's where they ended up. And they played in the remember the Junior World Series? You guys that young, my God. All right. Well, they used to have the winner of the American Association play the winner of the International League. It was called the Junior World Series.
Okay.
It was a big deal. So the Minneapolis Millers, that was the team before. This is before the Twins got there. And really 1959, 1960 or so. And who do they end up playing? The Havana Sugar Kings, right? Oh. So they go down and play in Havana. Castro comes to the bullpen, like, with a gun on, you know, and the troops are there, and, you know, the military's all over. The Millers said, let's get out of here.
Yeah.
And the Sugar Kings ended up winning the Junior World Series, and that was the last one they ever had in Havana. But, you know, that was baseball in the Caribbean.
Wow, no kidding. That's, I've never heard that story, Marty. It's pretty unique, to say the least.
We always hear a few every Sunday morning. It's part of the professor. That's part of our education. We'll take a break. There's a game today in Williamsport, Pennsylvania. And I'm not talking about, Curacao and Bam Bam's kids against Italy. The Cardinals are there playing the Pirates. It's a home game for the Pirates on Bowman Field, which is the second oldest minor league field in existence. 2,400 seats. Basically, it'll be little league families and relatives watching the game. And baseball has brought the Cardinals there, the Pirates there, and they're celebrating together Little League Day. So the tweeting is going on of pictures of George Contos and everyone with little league kids and all this. And then they're going to play a game. Now, this game may have implications, you know, for the wild card and everything else. They've regraded the field. They brought the military in, and they've done all this stuff, 40,000 tons of dirt and all this stuff, and they're going to play a game today. I want to ask you about that, what you think about it, and have you ever had one of those crazy exhibition games where they had to do all that from the field? So that's the big preamble. We'll take a break. The professor is here. We got baseball today, and we love Sunday morning. Allie Carmen with me as well, and we'll be back right after this. All right, I love when we take on the news of the day here with the professor. We're going to give you a news job here as well. But here, this game is in Williamsport tonight. Little League World Series is going on there. The Cardinals and Pirates have moved a home game from the Pirates at to Williamsport, and that will take place tonight, and they've redone the field and all that. Well, ever been involved? First, get your reaction to that, because these are major league teams.
Yeah, it's I know this commissioner is really into promoting the game of baseball with the nickname stuff coming up next week on the back of the jerseys. But this is unprecedented. I'm looking at some of the notes here that Allie put together. The seating capacity for the game is projected at 2,500 people, which is the lowest capacity for a major league game in history. That in itself is amazing because, you know, typically you talk about expansion or playing a game is can they seat enough people to have a major league game there, whether it's a spring training game where we've gone to Vegas or places to play an exhibition game. But this really is unprecedented. You know, I just mentioned in the spring we would do that, right? We go to Las Vegas to play a couple games to promote the game. I remember in AAA when I played for the Hawaii Islanders, there was 1 year out of the 3 years that I was there. We flew to the Big Island to play one game. So we were playing the Anaheim Angels, and they would come over to the island for 8 straight games. So we played our four or five games on Oahu. Then we flew over to the Big Island to play a game. We flew over to Kauai to play a game or two. And the facilities that we went to were not up to, United States, but your typical typical AAA facilities. I think where we went in Kauai, of course, there was no clubhouse. We were at a high school field, and you're dressing in a classroom, and you come out to the field, and the only stands they had for the fans was the old silver bleachers, about 10 rows up, about, you know, 15 feet wide, and there was probably only about 25 people at the game. But this is a major league game. I'm sure this place is going to be busting at the seams, and Williamsport has to be extremely excited about this.
Well, they are, because they've got, you know, 30,000 Little League people. You know, the place goes from, you know, a little sleepy town, Williamsport. The mayor loves this, you know, to all of a sudden all these people coming in. But they had to redo the field. You know, the clubhouse, they had to make it so, you know, you bring a major league team in. It's got to be somewhat of a major league facility.
Tremendous PR event, there's no doubt about it. You know, hopefully the playing conditions will be good. I mean, you know, the players can put up with anything for one day as far as, you know, where they're going to dress, the clubhouse and all that type of thing. You just think the extra travel, it's a little bit of a burden for the players, but I think all in all, they understand the importance of this. I mean, the Little League World Series going on, it is a game for the people and the kids. And I really think it's probably going to be, if everything goes smooth, a tremendous event for everybody involved.
Well, they want kids involved in baseball. You know, that's the idea. That's why this is going on, and it's a tremendous PR move. But John Rooney, who's John, the broadcaster for the Cardinals, used to be with the White Sox, a wonderful broadcaster, used to be at CBS Radio as well, he blasted it this week. He said, look, we're in a pennant race.
Right.
You know, we want to, and they are. They're putting pressure on Colorado and Arizona. Milwaukee comes in next, and the Cardinals both can overtake both Arizona and Colorado. And what if you lose by a game and some nutty thing happens in this part?
Yeah, and that's why I said, you know, the burden part of it. I mean, the travel in this game for the major leaguers is already very, very difficult. And now instead of being in Pittsburgh, well, I don't know if they were in Pittsburgh or St. Louis, maybe they were in Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
Instead of playing the three games there, you got to pick up and travel to Williamsport. And as we said, another night moving to a hotel or whatever it is in the conditions of the field, hopefully the field is up to standards where, nothing goofy happens on the field to cost you a game. But it is, you know, in reality, it is early enough in the season. I mean, we have a lot of games left. You hate to lose a pennant by one game. You can always point to something crazy in your travel, right? I mean, look at our day-night doubleheader we had in Washington, and then, you know, we have to get into Miami at 4. Those are the things that throw you into a funk as a team, you know, when you have these nightmare travel days and you have to play. Heaven forbid nobody gets hurt. Like, that's our biggest concern, you know. We have a delayed game in Washington for 3 hours. You start a game at 10 o'clock at night. Then you have a split doubleheader the next day. So you get done at 2 in the morning. You got a 1 and a 7. Your fear is somebody's going to get injured, and we work so hard to keep the players healthy in this game.
Look at me. Yeah, honestly, and Allie and Carmen and Raph and, Josh and all the people last weekend, you know, I was there, trying to figure out what was going on, and I had to do shows in between those hours. This is actually a question for you. In between games, now I know rain delays, you know, at least you know sort of the game, you know, maybe you rained out and you kind of do things. What do you do in between games when you got that 3 hour period in between?
Yeah, you know, it goes quick. I mean, the game's over, you get something to eat, and then you prepare for the next game. I think most of the players would probably, put their feet up and relax for an hour or so. But, it sounds like a lot of time, but these guys are used to sitting around for 4 or 5 hours before playing a game. So it goes fairly quick. Get something to eat, relax for as much as you can. And then I know the players go right back to that batting cage a half hour before the game's going to start to get ready for the next one. So, but I think most guys are trying to, you know, rest as much as possible. There's some guys that even lay down and shut their eyes for 15 minutes, you know. So it's a long day, there's no doubt. And you bring up a great point, which I've always said. What about the workers in the stadium and everybody? You know, they're there till 2 in the morning. the morning, and they got to come back to work at 7. And so it's a difficult deal for everybody involved. That's why I'd like to see them be a little more restrictive on a start time. You know, you can't wait 3 hours to start a game when you have a day-night doubleheader the next day.
Yeah. No, I agree. Look, we went through the whole weekend last weekend, so it was crazy for all of us here. But Raf and Josh, as I say, Steve Fishman, they did a great job, you know, because we were in that studio for 15 hours. You've worked with kids before. Bam Bam said you were at Curacao. And, of course, Curacao got knocked out of this tournament by the Dominican Republic. What's it like working now? I know you've done clinics and all over the world, but what's it like working with a kid? What do you try to tell a kid in a clinic?
Well, you know, it depends on the age. The age is that's the difficult thing working with kids. They really vary. So if you're involved with a camp and you have kids, you know, 7 to 12, the 7-year-old is much different than the 12-year-old. And then if you have teenagers, they're completely different than a youth player, you know, a 14 or 15 year old. But I think you try to show them more than you tell them, especially the young ones, you know, 7 through 12. You try to show them certain fundamentals that's going to help them be a better player. And I think the older kids, you do the same thing. The teenagers, you do the same thing. But I think you can discuss a few more things that will help them in their career, just not fundamentals, but, you know, how you're approaching the game and your mentality, a little bit more of the mental stuff that can help them as well.
Yeah, I think footwork is important. I see you working with Kelby Tomlinson a lot this week on turning a double play. What are you trying to work with him? I'm looking at his hands, his footwork coming across the bag. What are you doing with
him? No, you're exactly right. For infielders, you know, your footwork is critical. I mean, if you have good feet, you know, your feet make your hands better. When you have bad feet, the hands get stiffer. You'll say, guy, oh, he doesn't have good hands. You know, a lot of that is God-given. You know, you have good soft hands, but if you don't use your feet correctly, you're getting more in between hops and your hands look worse. The key is to get the hop you want. So it's critical that you use your feet and, you know, small, short, choppy steps to get the hop that you want. But in Kelby's case, we were just, reviewing some fundamentals of using two hands to turn a double play opposed to one. You know, on a good throw, it's quicker to use two hands and be in a lower position. So it's just a reminder, you know, he's played all over the field this year. He has been in the outfield, you know, short, third, second. So you're just constantly, keeping an eye out for the fundamentals that you think will help him be more efficient at the position.
Yeah, you're right. I noticed, as you said, and he was using two hands, mm-hmm. absolutely, to make sure he had that ball before he pivoted and got rid of it.
Right.
Yeah, I saw that. All right, very good. Hey, Bryce Harper hits the bag and he slides. Now, the bag's wet. It's this canvas, whatever that bag is made of, this hard rubber, and you could just see it. You could, you know, on the replay, this, whether he's wearing spikes or cleats, I'm not sure. But he hit that bag, and the wet bag caused the injury. Can't they do something now? You can't go back to the pillow bags that we had when I grew up. But what about the rain has stopped? What about changing the bases?
Yeah. Well, that's a good point. Look, we can always go there when you talk about an injury. Was it the base or was it his technique lunging for the base with his leg? And, you know, it was a combination of the two. The other thing that was involved with that particular play, which our players, some of them have used, is they wore the soft shoes, okay, the soft cleats, the plastic cleats. Yeah. Those don't grip the base the same as the metal cleats. So you're less apt to slip off a base if you have the metal cleats on because it grips the base. The plastics on that wet, you don't have the same grip, and you will slide. And I've seen infielders slip in the infield with the plastic cleats because you don't have the same footing. So it was a combination of things. But having said all that, if we want to make the base a little bit safer, changing the base is a great idea. But also maybe a little bit softer. I don't have any problem. I think if it protects, you know, a few guys from injury like that, even if their technique wasn't the best and they're using these other cleats, then it's a good thing for baseball.
Yeah, especially with the sliding, you know, with all the replays, and you don't want to do the foot-first slide because then you have to come off the bag. So you want to go in hands first, but you're going into a hard bag. So maybe make that softer for that reason.
Yeah, I think you could. I think you could soften the base up a little bit, and it would still, you know, it wouldn't affect the game all that much. It might be a little bit safer. I think it's a good thought, yeah.
Yeah, very good. Hey, the umpires. Let's talk a little umpires here as we wrap it up with the professor. They're wearing white wristbands. The umpires are tired of the abuse of Ian Kinsler, you know, talking about Hernandez or Zobrist saying something and all that kind of stuff, and Joe West complaining about Beltre and now going back and forth. And I was telling Pat this morning before he went out to the public house, you know, umpires used to take a lot of abuse. You know, the fans used to come out of the stands, you know, and throw things at the umpire. They would have fights with the umpires. The umpires had to be taken out of minor league towns by police escorts and things like that. So there's always been this thing between the fans, the players, the umpires, and all that. And now we live in this gentler world, and nobody wants to criticize anybody about it. But that's sort of the way baseball worked.
Yeah.
And you must have seen stuff with umpires before.
Oh, yeah. There's no question. I mean, this has gone on since the first game played, I guess, umpires and players not getting along. But, you know, I mean, there's a certain amount of professionalism that I think that you like to exhibit, whether you're a player or an umpire. And in this information age and the video age and, you know, everything's news today, I think we'd be better off if we just showed a little more professionalism sometimes on both sides. I know the players get frustrated, and rightfully so. You know, there's some umpires, look, they get graded. They get graded, and we know the grades of the umpires, the best umpires by gradings and the best umpires by their zones. There's heat maps, you know, if it's a low ball umpire or a, you know, back in the day, that's what you wanted to know, right? You want to know, is he a low ball umpire? Is he a high ball? Is he give, you know, the corners? Do you have a big plate? And you went up and hit accordingly. Well, today, we have visuals that confirm that. It's just not your own, you know, instinct watching the umpire and his reputation. So there's a lot of information out there, and we know who's good and who's not so good. And I think from the player's perspective sometimes, the guys that are rated at the bottom of the league, there's no recourse for them. I mean, at some point, if a player doesn't perform, he's gone.
Yeah.
He's gone. So I think that's where a lot of the frustration comes in, and things are said. It's just not one incident. It's over years and years and years, and I think both sides could use a little more professionalism.
Yeah, but you're right. There's that relationship between the game and umpires. It goes back to the beginning. As I said, they used to be, you know, they made no money. You know, they'd have to go from town to town. They'd come in and dress. They'd have a hook, you know, in a little closet somewhere. And then they'd have to be taken out of town by the police department because people would be screaming at them because they cost them a game when Williamsport played Altoona.
Right.
You know?
Right.
That's crazy. All right, that's the game we have. All right, one last thing for you, Will. Joe Maddon, you know, this guy is perfect for me. I mean, he gives me all the information. He wants to go to a four-man outfield.
Right.
Joey Votto kills him. He says, look, Joey Votto's killing me. We can't get him out. I'm going to a four-man outfield, and that's what he wants to do. Is that? Can we ever expect that?
We've talked about this here on this show, I think, a couple years ago. I think there's a place and time for it. I really do. I'm not saying you should do it all the time, but this ballpark is designed for a four-man outfield with triples alley. I see it being used more in a situation where, say, you have a Stanton at the plate from Miami, and it's a two-run game, and you have a runner on first. Why the heck do you need the second baseman? Put him in triples alley because you're in a no-double situation. You want nothing over your head. So, you know, that's a place and time to use the four-man outfield. Goldschmidt, you know, when he was hot and he was hitting Tim Lincecum in the gap constantly. So if you don't want a double, we all shift on the infield, right? We put three infielders with Stanton on the left side of the field. Well, that's only a single. Why not put him in the outfield to stop the extra base hit?
That's
so, yeah, and I think there's a lot of validity to that. And, you know, we have all the information. He's a ground ball hitter or a fly ball hitter. Again, it goes back to percentages, the pitcher he's facing. But I like it mostly when you're in a no-double situation. You don't want the ball to go in the gap where that run can score from first.
I like to see it. I'd like to see it. I don't think it's that radical or crazy. I think it makes sense.
I think it does make sense, too. So we'll see. We'll see if it happens some more or not.
All right. Well, you got plenty. You got 37 games to try it. So let's let's see what happens. All right. Hey, appreciate you being on, of course, and have a good day. And we'll see what happens in Williamsport later on. We'll watch that thing and see how that goes.
I'm glad you brought that up to me. I didn't even know this was going on. I need to watch the news or read a newspaper, I think, and take a look. But this will be interesting to see as well.
Yeah, more to talk about. Well, thanks so much, as always.
You got it.
All right, that is Ron Wotus, the bench coach of the Giants, and that is Sunday School with Will. Oh, wait a minute, Will, before you leave, we got the nicknames next week for the jersey. Are you the professor?
Well, Marty, I'm sad to tell you I'm not.
Really?
No. It was a tough call. You know, I have several nicknames, some we can't mention.
Yes.
But we went with Woe, which is another one I think that you probably started around here.
Yeah.
You know, many of my friends over the years, it's Woe Tie, Wody. But Woe, it's short, it's simple, and it's easy to say. And I thanks to you for that.
All right. I like the professor. But all right, Woe, have a good afternoon. All right,
thanks,
that's
Marty.
It. All right. More coming up on the Sports Leader.